JC Corcoran Podcast.
Starting with a trade, the Cards sending first baseman Keith Hernandez to the Mets in June 1983 for relievers Neil Allen and Rick Ownby. It escalated when a St. Louis disc jockey called the Mets pond scum, and it climaxed when these teams fought a virtual three-year war for dominance in the National League East. These franchises, these cities, do not like each other. We'll take a break now. When we come back, we will have a flashback to the 1980s when the Cards and Mets were bitter rivals, when they weren't the Mets but the New York pond scum, when they weren't facing the Cards but rather the St. Louis White Rats. Stand by.
See, the poor guy had no idea at the time when he made that comment on the Fox pregame show that we were the originators of the Mets are pond scum. And now from Fox Baseball's pregame show, we welcome to the show Mr. Keith Olbermann. All right, so tell us what happened. You know, Tony La Russa is still under fire both nationally and locally for his managerial moves during the series with the Mets. What do the Cardinals do wrong? And in your opinion, are the intense attacks against Tony La Russa, are they justified?
You can criticize a lot about how he mapped out his pitchers. But the problem, ultimately, when you look at that series was, you should never let Mike Matheny play with knives. That is not Tony La Russa's fault.
Keith Olbermann giving us dirt from being on the road with Joe Buck.
Joe has, on several occasions, stayed up past midnight. Joe gave me a lift from the hotel in St. Louis to his dad's restaurant and wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
It just keeps getting worse.
He said, I'm looking for directions to walk to it just so I don't walk the wrong way because I know it's down the block. And I got the concierge out there. I said, just point me in the right direction. And I hear this voice come up from the car. I can give you a lift. Get in the car and, you know, we're talking. And all of a sudden he stops. Okay, we're here. We've been in the car 90 seconds. What the heck is this?
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Aren't you glad you drank all that tequila last night? How you doing, kids? It is the May 6th, 2021 edition of the JC Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. We have so much to get to today, and at the end of the podcast today, you're going to hear one of the greatest moments ever in the history of our morning show, our over-the-air morning show. That was when Tommy Shaw of Styx stopped by the studio. And then we had such a good time, we decided to do another show later in the day. And you're going to hear the words and the music of Tommy Shaw of Styx. It is a great, great moment. We just have so much going on here today. And where do you want to start? Well, let's do some Mother's Day stuff here. Time is running out to buy something. If you need something last minute, somebody polled over 2,000 moms, asked them what they want, what they would really enjoy. Here are the top 10. A card, flowers, doing something with the family, maybe outdoors, a keepsake, chocolate, something homemade, a spa day or a massage, jewelry, a day to themselves, or for somebody else to take care of all the household tasks they normally do. 1 in 7 moms said breakfast in bed would also be great. 12% want clothes, and 1 in 8 said some booze would be appreciated. The American Society of Plastic Surgeons just released their data from last year, and only one procedure saw a ton of growth, and that is butt implants. The doctors think butt implants got more popular because of social media envy and people worrying about their butt flattening out from sitting around so much during the pandemic. 23 years ago today, May 6, 1998, Steve Jobs introduced the original Mac, one-piece monitor/computer and no floppy disk drive, the first but certainly not the last time Apple successfully forced obsolescence on a traditional component of the computer. The computer was designed to be fun and easy, to look easy to set up, to use, and easy to get online. Now, 23 years later, Apple just unveiled its 9th generation of iMacs. And the first one to bring in eye-catching colors since the OG iMac back in 1998. For some people, this would be horror. For other people, it would be heaven. Mark Wahlberg needs to gain weight for an upcoming movie. So he is eating 7,000 calories a day. Where do you hear this? It's about three times what the average American eats. He's working with doctors and nutritionists to make sure he's not killing himself by eating all this stuff. They've enlisted the doctors and everything. He eats every 3 hours. They've broken it up into eight meals a day. So here's what happens. He starts his day about 3 o'clock in the morning. He has 4 eggs followed by a workout. Then 8 eggs, 6 strips of bacon, a cup of rice, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and a protein shake. Then some sort of ground beef or ground turkey, either in a burger patty or a meatloaf, plus another cup of rice. Then half a roasted chicken, another cup of rice, a cup of cooked spinach, and a cup of cooked beets, an 8-ounce veal chop or pork chop, a 4-ounce piece of salmon, a cup of rice, olive oil, and beets. You know, I never knew this thing about rice. Does rice make you fat? I never knew that. There's a lot of rice in this thing. 8 ounces of some sort of steak, 8 ounces of some sort of white fish, and tons of vegetables. And then the nightcap, a mash consisting of 1 cup of cooked steel-cut oatmeal, 2 tablespoons of applesauce, 2 tablespoons of jelly or jam, 2 tablespoons of almond butter, and 1 tablespoon of molasses. Then he also has a cheat day over the weekend where he'll hit up his favorite restaurant and have, quote, pastas or pizzas or cookies, end quote. I want to hear the story about how he loses all this weight. And the series premiere of That Damn Michael Che on HBO Max, 6-episode series where Michael Che from Saturday Night Live uses sketches to tackle subjects like racial profiling and unemployment. A stint in rehab, and now John Mulaney back ready to return to stand-up. Josh Duggar reportedly in possession of 200 images of child pornography. Nancy Wilson of Heart put her entire new solo album, You and Me, on YouTube. It officially comes out tomorrow. Birthdays today from Saturday Night Live. This was one of the most stunningly attractive women ever on television, as far as I'm concerned. Former Saturday Night Live, Sasheer Zamata, 35 today. George Clooney turning the big 6-0. Roma Downey, 61. Tom Bergeron from Dancing with the Stars, 66. Bob Seger, 76 today. And Willie Mays is 90. Speaking of baseball, I want to talk about this thing last night. Unbelievably, I'm already getting blowback from some people on the voting in of Keith Hernandez to the St. Louis Baseball Cardinals Hall of Fame. Now, I know the old saying, they say, time heals wounds. And that's nice sometimes when that happens. But when you are the living, breathing embodiment of the enemy, I'm not sure it does work that way. Keith Hernandez hurt this franchise. He hurt it bad. Gussie and the Brewery and a whole powers that be back then went to Whitey and said, we can't have this anymore. You can't have a guy who's got more cocaine in his bloodstream than blood. Get rid of him. And so what do we get, like Rick Ownby and something else? Oh, Neil Allen. Oh, that helped. That helped a lot. And Keith Hernandez is, you know, being all teary-eyed about this, saying, well, you know, it was my youthful indiscretion. So what was he at the time? 27, 28? That's the age of reason. You know what you're doing. Believe it or not, we were all 27, 28 at some point, and a lot of us just didn't coke our lives away. He's making it sound like it was some sort of rite of passage, like pimples. That's a personal choice he made. He hurt the franchise. The trade hurt the franchise. Then he goes to the Mets and continues to pummel away at the St. Louis Cardinals with that whole creepy bunch with Lenny Dykstra and Wally Backman and Sid Fernandez. And it was a guy who was exposing himself out in the left field bullpen. David Cone. Daryl Strawberry says sometimes he would get laid between innings. Oh, but JC, you're ignoring the amazing defense of Keith Hernandez. He reinvented first base. Yeah, you know, when you're standing over there and there's a runner on first base and you have this snap tag that gets applied and you make it onto SportsCenter because of the snappy play, it's a lot easier to do that when you're cheating. And that's what he was doing. To be able to snap tag like that on a pickoff at first, he was putting his right foot on the bag, and his left foot was in foul territory. Makes it a lot easier to tag somebody that way on a pickoff attempt. There's only one problem. The rules of Major League Baseball say all players have to be in fair territory before every pitch. And if you got one foot in foul territory, you're not in fair territory. And until the league finally came along and said, Keith, we know that you're this brilliant defensive first baseman, but you got to follow the rules. So, you know, you're going to keep both feet in bounds in the field of play. And he didn't have as many snap tags, did he? I have a very good friend who came up in the hospitality business, you know, the hotel management thing. And when you do that, you get like an internship for like 6 months. You work at the hotel, and every week they put you in a different capacity at the hotel, which is a brilliant idea, by the way. Whoever came up with that is really, really smart, because if you're going to manage a hotel, what better way to manage it than knowing everything there is to know about the place and doing every job there is at some point in your training? Okay, so one day she's working the front desk, the next day she's working the laundry detail, the next week they got her at the pool in the workout room, and at one point she was assigned for a week to do food service, restaurant and room service. And you'll never guess who was staying in the hotel at the Marriott, which is where almost all of the out-of-town teams used to stay, right across the street from the ballpark, because it's so convenient, and then guys wanted to stay at the Ritz-Carlton, so it's not the same as it was. But anyhow, she obviously said they send her up to a room, and guess whose room she got? You got it, Keith Hernandez. And the story she told of what she encountered when she walked in there to deliver the food is not something that I can say, because I don't want to get sued. But I'll tell you this. At some point later on in the podcast, I'm going to blurt out something that sounds like it's completely disjunct. Like, wait a minute, that's not what you were talking about. What is that? What? But when you hear it, that'll be maybe the continuation of this story. Okay? And I'll tell you something else. I love Jerry Seinfeld's stand-up. I think he's brilliant. I hated his TV show. I despised his TV show. And of course, Keith Hernandez, part of that. You know, everybody today talking about the Keith Hernandez episode on Seinfeld. Because, of course, New York is better in every way, shape, and form. And Seinfeld couldn't have been a more New York-based situation comedy. There's that New York thing again. It's just New York, New York, New York. He's got nothing to do with St. Louis. He played here for a couple of years. Okay. He fucked up his deal. He screwed with the team. The franchise was put behind the eight ball because of his nonsense. Whitey had enough to worry about without worrying if his first baseman is going to take a line drive off the nose because he's so coked out. I don't understand these people, these sports writers and fans who voted for Keith Hernandez. I just don't get it. In the meantime, a guy like Lee Smith, go ahead, sometime, if you weren't around, your memory is a little fuzzy, go ahead and do a Wikipedia search on Lee Smith and then tell me, go ahead, try and tell me that Keith Hernandez belongs in the St. Louis Cardinal Baseball Hall of Fame ahead of Lee Smith. I am so sure. I really think that some of these columnists, sports writers, media people who get to vote on this, this is going to sound far-fetched, but I really think I got something here. Hernandez became so big in New York. And then did, you know, nationwide commercial endorsements, hair club for men or whatever it was. He was part of the Seinfeld thing, like I said. He wasn't part of the Miracle Mets of 1969, but he was part of those 80s Mets teams we absolutely could not stand the sight of. They just elected pond scum into the St. Louis Baseball Hall of Fame. By the way, I was talking about this on Facebook last night. That fourth inning in the first game of the Cardinals yesterday evening, you saw everything that was wrong with the game. Fourth inning must have gone for a half an hour. A bunch of walks, one visit to the mound, an injury, two challenges, almost an unbelievable blunder by Mike Schultz on that second mound visit. And they still have to come back and play another game last night. But, you know, let's allow these clown asses, Major League Baseball brass in New York, to make up stupid rules, because we're going to speed up the game. And in speeding up the game and, you know, trying to streamline things, they come up with this idea of in doubleheaders, you play seven inning games. All right. Other night, a guy throws a no-hitter for seven innings. Is that a no-hitter? or is it not? You know how many no-hitters are broken up in the eighth inning, the ninth inning? You know how many no-hitters are broken up with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, and the guy gets a base hit and blows the no-hitter? Happens all the time. So how can a seven-inning no-hitter be the same as a nine-inning no-hitter? It can't be. There's nothing even that begins to be fair about something like that. See, when you start fucking with the rules, stuff like this happens. Because the guys are sitting around going, oh, yeah, we didn't really think of that. What do you want to do? In the meantime, the guys say, do I have a no-hitter or do I not? By the way, the answer to it is that you create a new category. It's a seven-inning no-hitter. When people are looking up no-hitters, you see the nine-inning no-hitters, and you see the seven-inning no-hitters. But don't just leave it, you know, hanging in the lurch without any sort of resolution to the issue. That's totally irresponsible by these guys who are running the game right now. And I've been harping on this one forever. And a couple of years ago, I almost had Bud Selig, the then commissioner of Major League Baseball, I almost had him cornered. Oh, man, it was beautiful because I was going to hit him with this. You know, every other major sport, all of them, if something's going out onto the field, where even the announcers are like, well, what's going on down there? I don't know. Do you know? No. Why are they all out there talking? Some big long-ass conversation and everybody in the ballpark, everybody watching, everybody listening. They're all sitting there going, you're keeping us in the dark here. You know, the NFL does. The NFL gets on that giant loudspeaker and 70,000 people in the stadium and all the millions of people watching at home know what's going on. We have an illegal substitution on number 55. You know, they announce it to everybody. Hockey does the same thing. The official has that little thing on his belt, and he stands there right in front of the penalty box and explains it. All of the major sports have some sort of mechanism for this. Major League Baseball says, who cares? So what if they sit there all evening and have no idea what's going on in the game that they bought tickets for or the game that they paid for a subscription to Fox Sports Midwest or this Bally's thing they got now? Who cares about them? Why do they need to know anything? I'm losing my patience with this baseball deal. Losing my patience. And now this.
Dear Dave, letter number 3 begins. What's with the eyebrows? Do you shave them off? Or are they a much lighter blonde than your hair? In which case, which do you dye, your hair or your eyebrows? Your pal, Gary Brown, St. Louis, Missouri. P.S. The Mets are pond scum. Yeah. Hold it right there, Gary. Let me make one thing clear here. The Mets, in fact, are not pond scum. I'll prove it to you with this chart. Okay. First of all right, the Mets emit CO2. Okay, so does pond scum. The Mets occasionally very damp. All right, same with the pond scum. The Mets consume microbes. Pond scum consumes microbes. The Mets failed to beat St. Louis in the NL East, and, well, so did the pond scum. Here's one difference. The Mets are eligible for free agency after 5 years. Pond scum, not eligible for free agency after 5 years. The Mets annually sponsor Thermal Mug Night. Pond scum, on the other hand, disdain flashy promotions. Finally, the Mets have one player named Mookie. Pond scum, everyone is named Mookie. So, as you can see here.
In the 1980s, St. Louisans fondly referred to the Mets as pond scum, the driving force behind the catchphrase, radio personality J.C. Corcoran. Well, J.C.'s at it again with a different spin. Corcoran and crew are having 5,000 t-shirts and 7,000 signs printed up as we speak. A bold reminder, Mets are pond scum.
Fans can pick up free Mets are pond scum signs.
The Mets are pond scum.
The New York Mets are pond scum.
Nobody wants to go to New York and play the pond scum.
They're different players nowadays, but still pond scum.
I don't know where I heard it from, but it really gets catchy and it works.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you where it started with me.
Longtime St. Louis radio personality J.C. Corcoran chronicles in a new book how the roots of the Mets are pond scum go back to 1987 in a July regular season series against the Mets.
Started with a trade, the Cards sending first baseman Keith Hernandez to the Mets in June 1983 for relievers Neil Allen and Rick Ownby. It escalated when a St. Louis disc jockey called the Mets pond scum, and it climaxed when these teams fought a virtual 3-year war for dominance in the National League East.
Okay, so maybe St. Louis fans, though, aren't so civil. Take a look at what we found tonight.
These signs, thousands of them, will be going out tomorrow to fans, brought to you by a local radio station here, Pond Scum, referring to that bitter rivalry back in the 1980s. We're going to see a lot more stuff like this. Mandy?
Wow, this is getting nasty. All right, thanks a lot, Lynn. So the big game is now less than 24 hours away.
Cardinals fans would do almost anything to make the Mets feel unwelcome, like revisiting the past. Thousands of posters will be distributed around Busch Stadium tomorrow, and they read, Mets or pond scum?
The Mets and pond scum. I'll never forget that.
But where did the phrase come from? Local radio personality J.C. Corcoran actually used it first in 1987.
Radio host J.C. Corcoran made it a household phrase.
Pond scum is waste. It is refuse. It is of no value. There is no purpose for its existence. It is useless.
What's in this stuff? Peter Bernhardt is a biology professor at St. Louis University, and as he scooped some scum, he also admitted he's a Mets fan.
Oh, I think pond scum gets a terribly bad rap.
Our Steve Bartlestein woke up today to some Mets bashing on the St. Louis radio this morning, so he checked it out.
See, a bunch of cocky, jumpy East Coast guys.
We don't need it.
Well, if the traffic wasn't bad enough, we had to listen to this guy for more than 20 seconds. Still, upon arrival, I was cordial, as was this longtime morning team. In fact, we joined the show briefly, but then the gloves came off. But we can hold our own.
So what's your assignment today? What are you going to be doing?
Just slam you when I get back to New York.
But here's the best part, Mets fans.
Now, the thing about it is, see, we're coming to New York this weekend. Uh-huh.
Yep, remember that face.
It's up to you, New York. New York.
These franchises, these cities, do not like each other.
Two naked hookers spread out on the bed, and he comes to the door also wearing nothing. Yesterday, of course, Cinco de Mayo, and if we go back into the archives, it was May 5th, 1990, and it was all kept a little bit cloudy. They said, Tommy Shaw from Styx wants to do your show. He's going to come in, and he's got some things he wants to talk about. And if you were following the music business in the 80s, you know that there were some problems inside the band Styx, not only personnel problems, people not getting along with one another, but also there were a lot of drugs flying around, and there were rumors about Tommy Shaw. So he came in, he brought his guitar, and he sat down with us, and we didn't really know what we were supposed to ask him. And he didn't want to talk about his own individual battle with addiction, but he wanted to, I guess you would say, raise awareness. So we were sort of off balance on the entire interview. And, you know, he had his guitar, though, and it was like, you know, just play something because that's really what people want to hear. So we talked, and he played, and then we talked some more, and he played some more, and he had such a good time, and he was listening to the show, obviously, because he's sitting there right with us, and we were doing promos for a live remote broadcast we were doing at noon that same day from Casa Gallardo at Westport. And he said, would you mind if I came out there with you? We're like, are you kidding? Tommy Shaw from Styx? As a complete surprise to all the people eating on Cinco de Mayo at Casa Gallardo Westport, come on, let's have some fun. So here are the highlights of that day 31 years ago on the JC Celebrity A-List Interview of the Day.
So these songs were important to me in the early days, and I still get I still have people come to me and tell me, you know, that Crystal Ball was a very important song for them, and this song was one of those gifts from me that I was sitting at my mother's house living in Alabama, and it just came to me, and I wrote it down. Wrote it so fast, I wrote it twice. You know, there was enough for two songs there. But so anyway,
Tommy Shaw.
Sit and gaze for days through sleepless dreams, all alone, trapped in time, all alone, trapped in time. I wonder what tomorrow has in mind for me, or am I even in its mind? Perhaps I get a chance to look ahead and see. Soon soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball. But tell me where I'm going. I don't know where I've been. Tell me, won't you tell me and then tell me again? My heart is breaking, my body's aching, and I don't know where to go. So tell me, won't you tell me?
Sound great. God.
Gotta have another one of these donuts. When get to the
That's where you get the energy, huh? And a warm St. Louis welcome for our guest today, Tommy Shaw.
Yeah! All right. See, I love this. I got a couple of guys from California here. It's raining and they don't know what to do with this. You guys don't mind weather here, do you? Nah. So. Okay, Tommy. You guys doing okay?
Tommy. Yeah.
Girls with guns.
Duck! Everybody hit the floor.
I haven't played this in about 10 years. I tell you now. The wall. Shoot straight, don't wait, aim for the heart and fire away. That's what I said. Thank you. The reason I said everyone is because I don't remember how to play that one. Okay, any other requests before I play something? Damn Yankees.
Stairway to Heaven, what?
How about, so it takes the, some of the damn Yankee stuff. I need my good buddy Jack Blades here, but I could do a little bit of. Can you take me high enough to fly me over yesterday? Can you take me high enough? It's never over to yesterday. It's just a memory I'm running. My band for that. Damn Yankees. Do y'all want to hear? This is kind of unusual, but does anybody familiar with the Roy Orbison song called Crying?
Now, hold on a second here. Now, Roy Orbison had he could hit four octaves or something. Isn't that right?
Well, no one can do it justice, but I'd like to give it a shot. All right.
Good. Tommy Shaw.
Because Roy Orbison, the first time I ever appeared on television, I did a Roy Orbison song when I was in the sixth grade.
What was it?
It was Pretty Woman. I dedicated it to my sixth grade teacher.
All right. Tommy, do you need these dark glasses?
So, Mrs. Hinton, I'm going to dedicate this one to you, too. Yeah, do I need the glasses for this?
We have sunglasses if you want them. You can do a whole Roy Orbison thing. Here you go.
All right, y'all bear with me on this one. I got a label on this thing. Roy never had labels on his glasses. I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But when I saw you last night, you held my hand so tight. When we stopped to say hello, though you wished me well, you couldn't tell that I'd been crying over you, crying over you. Then you said so long and left me standing all alone, alone and crying. I thought that I was over you, and it's true, so true. I love you even more than I did before. But darling, what can I do?
We're live at Casa at Westport. We're going to come right back. What a day. What a day. And that puts a lid on our podcast today for the 6th of May, 2021, here at jcontheline.com. Continue to do what you're doing. I've asked you. You guys are doing it. It's great. We're adding people every single day. And just tell them we're here every morning at 7 o'clock. You can download it, listen whenever you want. But we are here. We post at 7 a.m. Central every single day at jcontheline.com. Thank you very much. Back tomorrow. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.